You are Locked On Suns, your daily Phoenix Suns podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Closing out the week, going deep on these 8-5 Phoenix Suns with one of the best that there is. On today's Locked On Phoenix Suns, we are part of the Locked On Podcast Network, and I am your host, Brendan Kleen. You can follow us on Twitter and on Instagram, at Locked On PHX Suns, and you can follow me on Twitter, at Brendan Kleen 14. There's nobody better to break down the intricacies of the NBA than Mo Dekeel. He was a former video coordinator for the Clippers, for the Spurs. He knows Chris Paul from those days, and he does great stuff as a media guy now on Bleacher Report and as a podcaster at The Athletic. He does the Nerder She Wrote show with Dave Dufour and Seth Partno every single week. If you have not heard Mo before, you will enjoy it plenty. He breaks down what he's thought of the Suns, the .5 offense, the fit of Chris Paul into all of that, what he's seen from DeAndre Ayton, what is the DeAndre Ayton ceiling from what we know right now. A ton of great stuff from Mo. But first, if you guys are new to the show, welcome in. Hope you are having as much fun this season as I am. But if you want to be with us, if you want to join us, have a good time, do some interactive stuff, mailbags, locker room broadcasts, go ahead and hit that subscribe button to get Monday through Friday Suns news analysis and recaps in your inbox, in your podcast feed every single day. Spotify, hit the follow button. Apple, hit the subscribe button. Whatever platform you're on, make sure you are locked in right here. All right, guys, without further ado, let's get to my interview with Mo, who gave us a ton of great stuff. Excited today to be joined by Mo Dekeel. He writes about the NBA at Bleacher Report, podcasts about the NBA at The Athletic, and is one of the best Twitter follows on NBA Twitter, constantly breaking stuff down, constantly watching every team. And that's why we love to have him on the show, because as our listeners know, not a whole ton of people, maybe that's changing this year, actually dedicate time to the Suns in a legitimate way, but because they are 8-5, they are turning a little bit of heads here this season, and a nice win that we are recording just after against the Rockets on Wednesday. So Mo, I'm curious to hear from you just what you've made of this new look Suns team, maybe how they're different from your expectations, and what you've liked about them so far this season.
Yeah, I mean, look, they're, first off, it's a really fun group. You know, when you look at this team from Devin Booker and Chris Paul and DeAndre Ayton as kind of like the headline names, everybody after that are all talented and fun. I think there is a good group of guys in what the Suns have built with this team and the organization. And you know, I like what Monty Williams is doing. The expectations, I don't know what I really expected, Brandon, coming into the season. I expected them going into the season to be like, all right, they're going to be better than last season. I wasn't sure how much better. Sure. But, you know, they're in a good groove now, but I almost feel like they could even be better than what they are. And I think some of that has to do with shortened training camps, not a lot of preseason games and all of that stuff. But I think there's a level that they can hit. Like, they still haven't hit their best gear with what this team is. But I think their ultimate stuff is, you know, they're playing well and they're getting valuable contributions from guys like Mikal Bridges, from Crowder, from Cam Johnson, from Dario Saric. Like, they're getting a lot of key pieces from key contributions from those guys. And it's kind of allowing it to be a little bit easier for Booker, for Paul, and for Ayton.
Yeah, are you surprised to see the way that we're going to get into DeAndre Ayton and his season? We're going to get into the give and take between Booker and Paul and how that adjustment process is going. But just generally, does it surprise you that we've seen a lot of games from this team where, you know, I think You have games where like Mikal Bridges is scoring 30 something points. You have some hot 3-point shooting nights. Like, I think going in, the attention was on the Chris Paul trade. We know Devin Booker can do special things as a scorer. We obviously remember DeAndre Ayton being a number one overall pick, but like, does it surprise you that we've seen some of the other guys actually win games for this team?
Yeah, I mean, like, look, let's just go into it. Like, if Devin, if you told me at the beginning of the year, hey, the Suns, I'm trying to do math in my head, so this is a problem, 13 games into the season, are Devin Booker's only going to average 22 points, I'd be like, man, they got to have a below 500 record. You know, and I think that's the surprising thing, is they're getting so many contributions from those guys that it's allowing it to kind of just sort of develop in its own. And, you know, Booker doesn't have to be the guy every night. You know, it doesn't have to be him dropping 35 and things like that. I think it is surprising. There's no way to, I don't think anybody could have expected that, even with how good Bridges was in the bubble and things like that. I don't think anybody could have really expected the Suns to be able to win games with those guys winning the games more than their top guys.
Who do you like the most out of that group? Some of their role players. It seems like everyone sort of had a night this season where they've gone off. But which one of those guys has caught your attention the most this year?
Well, I'm always going to be partial to a guy like Mikal Bridges. I mean, you know, he's shooting the ball really well at 44% from three. But I think the other thing, too, is he just defends.
Yeah.
And I think he brings a good element. He's perfect for what this team needs. And another guy I love is Dario Saric. You know, and I don't even think they've gotten the most out of him yet. I know he's not really putting up big numbers, but I think he allows them to add another playmaker on the floor, and using him as a playmaking five, I think, can open up so much more of their offense and make things a little easier for everybody else offensively. So, you know, those are probably like the main guys that, you know, of the role players that I really enjoy watching.
And then with the defense too, I mean, that's been for me personally the biggest surprise here. I did feel like their perimeter defensive talent was good enough that maybe, you know, by the end of the season they could get into a top half of the league type of defense, maybe at best. But they've surpassed that so far. You know, we'll see where they end up. Season still has a long way to go. But just overall, the way that they've been able to coalesce so quickly on that end has been a big surprise for me. What have you seen that's allowed them to defend at a pretty high level right away?
I think it's just a continuation of last season and just having better defenders on the court, right? Like Jay Crowder's a good defender. You know, obviously Chris Paul's an upgrade, you know, and he can defend, you know, several ways. He's not the defender he used to be, but I think he's better than Ricky Rubio in terms of what he brings. I think, you know, they have a top 10 defense barely right now. Like, yeah. It's teetering.
It's
fallen.
Right? It was like top five, then top eight. Yeah, we got it. The benchmark keeps moving. Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to fluctuate. And that's the way it goes all season for every team. You know, it ebbs and flows. But I think if they can just maintain a top five, top 10, move it into maybe the top eight defense, they'll really be in good situations. I think we saw a continuation of DeAndre Ayton continuing to be a weak side force, you know, coming in and helping and holding that up. I mean, look, we're talking about he had five blocks against Houston the other night. Like that's a big step up for them, especially when they had Christian Wood, who's been rolling for them all season. Like that was a big game for Ayton. And I think just the continuing of that stuff. And this is still a young team. And this is Monty Williams' second year with the team. They're still learning the system. There will be ways where this can improve and get tighter and get better. And that's how you go from, you know, top 10 to top eight to top five eventually by the end of the season. And I think they have enough guys that they can actually be a top five defense.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see if maybe they do look for some backup five depth, maybe like a defensive option. Although Saric is, as people listening to my show know, I do think he's a little bit underrated as a defender. He's at least like a guy who can occupy some space there. His verticality is pretty good and all that. We'll see if that would be the only thing I think they might need to add to feel good about the defensive side every single night, especially come playoff time. But I do agree with you. I think maybe we underestimated the talent overall, and I think Monty Williams deserves a lot of credit for putting in a system that makes the wing length that he's that this roster has kind of at its best and all the rest. But I want to pivot to the offense and start with Devin Booker and Chris Paul. We'll do that right after a quick break. There's no better time than right now to be a sports fan, and BetOnline has you hooked up. The NFL Divisional, the NFL Conference Championship round, rather, is just around the corner, and every night there's NBA action, college basketball action, and of course, what we love here on this show, the NBA. There's only one place that has you covered for all of it, and only one place we trust on the Locked On Podcast Network. That is BetOnline.ag. Sign up today for a free account at BetOnline.ag and use the promo code Locked On. That's all one word, the name of our network, for your 50% welcome bonus. Here's my bet of the day for you guys. I'm looking at the 2021 NBA regular season MVP odds, courtesy of BetOnline, and I have to scroll so far down this list to find Joel Embiid, who sits there at plus 800 in sixth place on this list, despite the fact that the Sixers are near the top of the Eastern Conference and have weathered the storm of COVID, have weathered the storm of the James Harden trade rumors, and yet every single night, just about, Joel Embiid looks like the best player on the court on either side. He's handling the ball, he's protecting the rim, he looks like a bona fide superstar, he's handling the load for this team, he's stayed healthy, plus 800, sixth place, that's absurd. Head over to BetOnline, take advantage of that one. You don't even need to pay me back for it. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. Get in on the action. And don't forget that promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. All right, we're back here with Mo Dakhil of The Athletic and of Bleacher Report. Does a great job covering the league at a very, very detailed level. So I have to give you credit, Mo. Did you know, do you remember this? When Monty first got hired, I DM'd you asking what he meant. What was he talking about when he said 0.5 offense?
I don't remember.
I knew you would know.
I'm getting old, Brandon.
I knew you would know. And I'm sure you have a lot of people asking similar things of you, but I do have to give you credit for that because I wasn't familiar with the term, but then I did a YouTube deep dive and obviously went down the Spurs coaching tree rabbit hole on YouTube and watching a bunch of drills on how this stuff gets coached and practiced and everything. So I think it's been the biggest thing that I've watched this year is how does a Chris Paul team, which this team already very much is, they're very, very low in pace. They like to grind it out. They do move the ball, but they have morphed into much more of a Chris Paul team. But how does that kind of mix with the 0.5, the tenets of a 0.5 system? So I'm interested to see what you've seen there and that give and take, because the way they played with Ricky Rubio is a lot different than how they've been playing with Chris Paul.
Yeah, I mean, I think the common perception of Chris Paul, and I had this when I was with the Clippers, when we got Chris Paul, I was like, man, we're going to be such a fast team, just because that was the perception in my head, like, we're going to be up and down, this is going to be great. And then it just kind of occurred to me, like, oh, he's a slowdown point guard. Mm-hmm. You know, and the pace ends up being relatively slow with Chris, and you know what, that's perfectly fine, because he's so methodical in how he attacks. It works for him. I mean, they are, you know, 28th in pace right now. I think that's the thing that I think would surprise everybody when you have those guys. I think that still might be too low. I think they need to try to bump that up.
I agree.
But in terms of your questions of how does that work with 0.5, it's still the same tenets, though. You got to make a decision quickly. You know, it's just you're not running the ball up the court and flying. It's about making decisions quickly and moving and getting into the right spots from there. You know, and, you know, the ball's going to stick, and it should, in guys like Chris Paul's hands, in Devin Booker's hands. It shouldn't stick in Crowder's hands. It shouldn't stick that much in Mikal Bridges' hands. You know, it's those guys that really got to be super tight on the 0.5. more than anybody else, you know, more, you know, those type of role players, you know, it's catch, shoot, pass, move. It's those are kind of the options there. And I think that's really what they're thinking about. And I think that's how it kind of melds, but I'll be honest with you though, Brandon, like, they do got to kick the pace up a bit. You know, I think that'll help a little bit. You got to find that balance. 28 is too low. at pace. And listen, they're there with some good company. Like the Clippers are 27th. You know, it's not like this is I don't need them flying up and down the court, but I think there are opportunities missed sometimes with just how slow they are.
When you have so many, it's one thing to say like, you know, Chris Paul is there and they can make some use out of his smarts in transition. They like, yes, Chris Paul slows things down, but he's not usually a guy in the bottom five of pace. He just tends to be, you know, maybe in the bottom half of the league. Like the Houston teams obviously were a little bit of an anomaly, but like you go up and down his career and he's not like just, you know, 20 seconds out of the shot clock every time down. So that's one thing. But the other thing is like they have so much talent that should be getting out on the run. Like DeAndre Ayton, you got to get him some time in space where he can just get a lob, go seal somebody. You have to let Devin Booker operate in space rather than having to work so hard for every shot he gets. Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson's like a really smart spot up guy in transition situations. So they have the talent. We saw it in the bubble. We saw it all last year. They can't necessarily just veer too far in the other direction. I think it would be a mistake as well. But one more thing on Paul here, because you did mention that you got to kind of break his game down a little bit when he was with the Clippers every day. And I'm curious, like, what should we be watching for? I know he's at a little bit of a different phase in his career now than he was then, but like, what should we be watching for to see like, okay, Chris Paul's comfortable, his legs are under him, he's looking good, because we really haven't seen even one game this year. He's been good, he's been everything they've really needed. They're 8-5, it's not an emergency, but we haven't seen like a vintage Chris Paul game. We haven't seen a game where he just dominates, controls everything the way we know he can. What should we be watching for to know that that's coming?
I really think it's when he gets to the point where it's like, I can get to my mid-range spot whenever I want and pull up and knock down those shots, you know? And I think he's kind of easing his way into the season a little bit, feeling things out, you know, because you're right. We haven't had the I'm in total control Chris Paul game yet, where he just sort of orchestrates everything. And I think when you start to see that is really once he gets his mid-range going, because then defenses start freaking out.
Especially when you have as much shooting on the floor as the Suns do, yeah.
Right, you know, and then that will open up, you know, roles to Ayton. That'll open up, you know, opportunities on the wings for Bridges and Johnson and opportunities for Booker, who can play off of the second side action when Chris swings it to him, when the defense overreacts to him doing that. We just haven't quite, at least from what I felt and in the games that I've watched, I just haven't felt like we've gotten Chris Paul in his bag yet, and that might take a while. So I wouldn't, you know, as long as they're winning right now and they're on a good pace, I think he'll get there, but I think it's still something to watch for.
Yeah, and like I tweeted at the maybe like too early, obviously, because it didn't come true in that Houston game, that he did go to that mid-range. I think he made like three, maybe even four in a row, and I was like, okay, here it is. We're getting that game. And he just didn't, he's still just picking his spots. And I think he felt like he needed to set the tone early. They got out to a big lead or relatively big lead and then obviously won the game. So again, it worked. Like he knows what he needs to do to make the team win. And he's been he's criticized himself plenty when he hasn't been up to that task. He had six turnovers on Monday in that loss. Like he's not happy with his own performance, which also shows that, you know, to me, he's just not quite comfortable yet. And they've obviously benefited too. When you have a backup point guard playing as well as Cameron Payne has, it helps. They don't need, and you have Booker who can handle the ball. Like they're not reliant on Chris Paul in the same way that maybe the Thunder were last year or whatever. So let's hope that, yeah, you can keep winning while also getting guys back comfortable. But to that same note, you mentioned Devin Booker at the beginning of this, his relatively down season so far. He's been coughing up the ball. He's getting to the rim a little less, like still not really getting into that elite three-point shooting level. I don't know if he'll really ever be that type of a player, honestly. What have you observed from Booker's adjustment here? Because I think coming out of that bubble, everybody just assumed this guy was going to make a leap. I was predicting he'll at least get some like fourth, fifth place MVP votes if they're as good as they can be. Like, that's my expectation. I think that was a lot of people's expectation, but we just haven't seen it. We've seen like a good but not great season from Booker so far.
I think this is the weight of expectations. you know, and I think he's might be thinking too much, to be honest, Brandon. Like, he might be thinking, okay, with these new expectations, I got to play differently. And really the thing I got to point to is his free throw attempts are way down, you know, and because, I mean, it's at 5.2 last season. He was at 7.3. And to me, that's kind of almost an aggression thing, you know, sure. and getting to the line and things like that. And some of that's because Chris has the ball in his hands and things like that. There's a million ways we can dissect the reasons as to why his free throws are down this year. But that's not acceptable. Like, he needs to be getting to the line 7-8 times a game. And that's something that he needs to kind of put that pressure on. And I think some of it is him thinking too much. And I think some of it might be him trying to emulate a little bit what Chris Paul does, you know, and that's not Devin Booker's game. And I'm not trying to trash Booker. That's just not his game. He's not being him right now is really kind of what I feel like when I'm watching it. You know, I mean, to me, he's a, and I don't mean this in a bad term, so I don't want fans to get mad at me or anything, but it's like, you know, he's a hot shot scorer, right? Like, he comes in and I'm going to get buckets and I'm going to crush you and you're going to bend to my will. And then when you collapse on me, I'll find other guys and things like that. We're just, while I'm watching all of this stuff, and it's, and it seems like he's trying to orchestrate more. And I get it, you know, with what the team has and with these expectations, maybe he's trying to do a little less thinking it's going to take the team further, but I think he needs to be amping it up more. You know, it's almost like the football analogy, right? Like, when the quarterback stops taking as many chances because he's trying to manage the game, the team isn't as good. Booker needs to be the guy to take those chances because you got Chris. Chris is going to take care of the managing of the games and things like that. You don't need to worry about that. You need to go be Book. And I think that's something that we haven't really seen a lot of. You know, I haven't felt like I've seen a scoring outburst from him yet. You know, he's averaging fewest points, you know, nearly since his second season. He's averaging nearly two and a half assists fewer than last season. Like, those are concerning things there. And I just want to almost be like, let Book be Book, man.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I think too that, like you said, I mean, he it does feel like maybe he's overthinking it. Maybe he's almost trying too hard to adjust. It almost feels like this is the first season in his career where he probably doesn't need to adjust much. He really can let everything come to him a little bit, where he has Paul to set him up. This system, we know he can play well in it. He can pretty much make any shot on the court. He's a real three-level scorer. Like, there's not much of a limit to what he's going to be able to do, but it doesn't necessarily feel like that's all kind of coming within the flow of things or necessarily entirely comfortably for him right now. So yeah, that's interesting. I want to ask you this because I don't know, just thinking about it myself. Where do you have Booker among like the young guards? This is like an endless conversation. I feel like it comes up all the time, but we've seen some of these other guys, Jamal Murray, Donovan Mitchell, not have incredible starts to the season necessarily either. Where do you have Booker in that group among his kind of that like combo guard scorer? Bradley Beal maybe in there too.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think Beal's probably the top of that of the names you mentioned.
Okay.
You know, I think Beal's on another level, but I don't think Booker's far behind him. You know, I think, you know, listen, man, there's a whole lot of stuff where it was, you know, is Booker just a good guy putting up good stats on a bad team's thing and all of that stuff. No, the dude can play flat out and he can win you games, but it's when he's playing like himself, you know. And when you look at seasons past, I think, you know, this last season was such a revelation for people that once you put competent players around Devin Booker, everybody realized how good Devin Booker was. And I think, you know, you're seeing the same thing this year. I just think it's more of him. He needs to get back to being him, but I kind of have him. He's kind of in the range. He's sort of even to me with Mitchell. I mean, Jamal Murray's a little step back just because I'm concerned with how bad he was, how rough he's been and inconsistent in the start of this season, sure, considering how good he was in the bubble. Booker was good before the bubble and in the bubble. So, you know, he's got to be above Murray in that respect to me. So I think him and Mitchell are probably right behind Beal. and then with Murray a little behind those three.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's fair. I agree. I think Murray, it's disappointing that he wasn't able to capitalize. He was sensational in the bubble and making tough shots and everything, and it doesn't seem like that's necessarily translated, but we'll have to see. It's fun to watch kind of that group, because I do think they're sort of the next wave of talent in the league, and which one of them sort of cements themselves at the top, we'll see. Let's take another quick break and then hit on DeAndre Ayton to close out the show. Okay, we are back here with Moda Keel. Make sure as well, right after you're done here, go hit subscribe on our latest show on the Locked On Podcast Network, which is Locked On Bets. 15 to 20 minutes a day, getting you ready for the best bets across every single sport. NBA, college basketball, NHL is back. They have you no matter what you like to bet on, no matter how much or how little you like to bet. That's the best show out there. Makes you a little richer every single day. All right. So we're talking, Mo, after this massive game from DeAndre Ayton. 26 points, 17 rebounds, 5 blocks. You mentioned it a little bit. Christian Wood, to his credit, did tweak an ankle in this game, so the Suns got a little bit of a break there, and they're still adapting with Oladipo in that lineup and no John Wall. So Ayton should have taken advantage. He did, and that's good to see. But I think about this guy every day. Suns Twitter argues about this guy all the time, so... I honestly just want to start at the very baseline here. What do you make of DeAndre Ayton, and what kind of player do you think he can be?
I think what he showed last night is what he can be, is his ceiling, right? Like, he can be a dominant force. You know, he can post up a little bit. He can be a strong pick and roll guy, and he can defend. And I think it starts on the defensive end more than anywhere else. I know I started with the offensive end, but I wanted to end on the defense part. But the defense is where things are going to go. He's got to be that guy in the paint where it's when you drive in the paint, you got to be looking over your shoulder going, where's DeAndre Ayton? You know, mm-hmm. And you know, he's got to be able, if he's not getting a block, he's got to alter shots. He's got to be good in the pick and roll and whatever coverages they're in. You know, I'm still not quite sold on him switching or anything like that. You know, if he's going to play drop coverage, I want to see him handle that a little bit better. And that's something that I would trust will grow with Monty Williams. Got to remember, he's still really young, right? Like, it's still going to take a while for all this to continue to grow. He's in his third season. It's still going to take a while for him to develop all that stuff. But like, that game yesterday was kind of is the ceiling. Of, you know, he can be a dominant big man, you know, if he hits that mark. But the problem is, and this is where I get concerned, Brandon, is then there are games where it's, you know, he just has 8 points. You know, there are games where, you know, he should have he's averaging a double-double now, and that should be without a doubt, you know. But, like, he's got to be more aggressive on the offensive end. You know, the one thing that really surprised me more than anything when I was looking at the stats preparing for this podcast, and this is really the Suns as a whole, they're a bad pick and roll team. You know, for as much as they run it, you know, I was looking at the stats on Synergy, and, you know, their points per possession for pick and rolls that include passes. So this includes hitting the roller. This includes the ball handler scoring. This includes the kickouts to the shooters and things like that. Their points per possession is 0.94, and that's 23rd in the league. When you have Chris Paul and Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton as your role man, like, that's got to be at least, you know, in the top 10. Like, that's got to be your thing. And if anybody's curious about how many times they've ran it, 456 possessions. Like, that's just not enough. They got to be better in that regards. And those are the things that surprise me. And I think some of that is, you know, Ayton's got to do a better job of setting those screens and really hitting the body and then rolling. And I think those are things that he's got to improve on as he gets – older. But as a team, for me, this is what I was saying in the beginning, the team can be better. I think they can be a lot better once they figure out how to get the pick and roll game going.
That's a good point. I mean, I think it illustrates that all that we've been talking about, where none of these three stars of this team have really hit their stride yet this year and haven't necessarily figured out how to all work together to be kind of better than the sum of their parts yet. It's really been threes, the bench, and the defense that have won this team their 8 games for the most part. Maybe outside of that opening night matchup where Booker and Paul really did close that game against the Mavericks, but Yeah, that is a good point. I mean, so you, like, a lot of the debate about Ayton is like, should they try to grow his post-up game by kind of giving him some opportunities here and there? We know how frustrating that mid-range shot, the fall away that he loves so much, can be. You know, is it worth letting him work that out on the fly? But it sounds like you kind of think that the best way to continue to give him opportunities while also just making the team better is just to give him more of those screen and roll looks.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not against giving him post-ups, you know, and things like that. He's not a bad post-up player. I mean, that's the bulk of his possessions are in the post, according to Synergy, when I look at the stats and things like that. And, you know, it's he's just got to be a little bit stronger in the post. He's not bad. He's putting up decent numbers and things like that. But overall, you know, I think he's got to just figure out what he can do in the role game is really where it will sort of just force defenses to collapse on him. And that will allow, you know, either Paul or Booker to find shooters, or him in a short roll situation where he rolls and then kicks it out to the corners for a three. Like, that just opens up your offense on so many other levels. I don't think he's ever going to be a post guy that's so dominant that you have to go double him. He's not going to be Jokic. He's not going to be Embiid, you know, and I think that limits it, and it doesn't raise the floor for everybody else, but him as a dominant roller will. And I think that will open doors for the whole offense for the Suns. And I think that's kind of that. I'm not against him working on his post-ups, because you got to have variations in your offense. But I think, you know, ultimately right now, I think they need to figure out this pick and roll action with him and the two guards before they invest so much time in the post-ups.
I think I agree. And we've seen the connection on lobs and his awareness there. That was a big storyline for this team through the first couple of weeks, was, you know, Monty and Chris getting on him about knowing how to attack in that situation, getting his kind of that tunnel vision and looking to score. He was trying too hard to pass on some of those short roll situations, or turning a roll into a post up, just some weird decision making stuff for him. It seems like he's getting more comfortable. They've connected on some lobs in the past few games. So definitely signs of growth, especially for Ayton after two strong nights from him. And Mo has given us a lot to chew over as we keep watching this team. So appreciate your insight as always, Mo. You want to plug anything? What are you up to lately? I know you're doing power rankings. That's a I'm always impressed with Suns people fans who can do that.
Suns fans were upset with me a few weeks ago because I didn't have them in the top five. And you guys went and lost to the Wizards. So
you were proven right.
Maybe you guys might want to chill out a little bit. You were six. It wasn't a big
if they were fifth or fourth, they would have said we should have been top three, right? So you can't win.
Power rankings are an adventure. You're going to piss off multiple fan bases. So it is what it is. But I'm doing those for Bleacher Report. Those are out every Monday. I try to make sure I hit salient points for each team for the week. And then, you know, I'm on all sorts of podcasts for The Athletic. Nerd or She Wrote on Fridays, part of the NBA Athletic. Show, or The Athletic NBA show. It's not good when I screw up the names. And I'm on the Daily Ding a couple times a week, so you can check me out there. Easiest thing to do is just follow me on Twitter, MODAKHIL_NBA, and you know, you'll see all my work from there.
All right, wonderful. Definitely check Mo out. Anything he writes or talks about is worth listening to. I learn a lot, and we will be back with all of you on Monday with Brandon for our weekly show. Two Nuggets games over the weekend to talk about, and probably plenty more. Have a good weekend, everyone. We will talk to you then.